I want you to imagine the future in motion, where all cars are green, bicycles rule, and public transit is fast, frequent, and fun. It's a world where mobility is sustainable and accessible to everyone, where energy is clean and abundant, renewable and affordable, where communities aren't just smart, they're intelligent and nurturing places to live. So come along and explore that world with me on this EV World Future in Motion podcast.
Hi, I'm Bill Moore for EV World, and we're going to discover more about the future in motion today by talking to Tony Seba. Tony and his colleagues out in Stanford in the California area have co-authored a really interesting 77-page report, study, whatever you'd like to call it, called Rethinking Transportation 2020 to 2030. Well, that would be sort of academic sounding, but here's the kicker. The subtitle is The Disruption of Transportation and the Collapse of the Internal Combustion Engine Vehicle and Oil Industries. Wow, that's a heck of a title, Tony.
Yep. It's happening. It's a technology disruption. So we're going through essentially what the mobile industry went through a few years ago, 10 years ago, through what the iPhone did to and Android smartphones did to telephony. And we're going through what Uber did to taxis. And that has been happening in less than 10 years. Both have been happening in about 10 years. And we're going through what internal combustion engine automobiles did to horses. So this is a technology disruption. And, you know, the findings in our report are self-explanatory. It's all about the economics.
Right. Well, that's what I really found intriguing. Let's sort of back up a little bit. What was the catalyst for doing this, and how long have you been working on this study?
Well, I've been working on technology disruptions for a good 10, 12 years. And that's how I created my technology disruption framework, which essentially includes cost curves of exponential technologies. It includes business model innovation. It includes products innovation. And there are several ways of disruption. And so I took that framework and I applied it to energy and transportation. And I published a book about 3 years ago called Clean Disruption,
right,
of Energy and Transportation, which essentially said that technologies like solar and batteries and electric vehicles and self-driving and ride-hailing were going to disrupt all of energy and transport by 2030. As a follow-up to that, I co-founded, I and my co-founder, James Arbib, who's based in London, co-founded RethinkX,
right,
as a think tank to study disruptions and the implications and the choices that society had to make in order to take advantage of the upside of the benefits of disruptions while mitigating the downside of disruptions, because we have both. It's the you know, creative destruction thing. And essentially, Rethink Transportation is the first of about five or six reports of different industries that we're going to do. So RethinkX is a think tank, and we're going to do several more reports in other industries, energy, food, healthcare, real estate, and so on.
Okay, well, that was going to ask you, well, what were the other, because obviously this was, I think, just the beginning of a series of those. What are some of the, you know, in your mind, when you were doing this study, what were some of the disruptive, the most disruptive things that sort of jumped out as you looked at them?
Yeah, so one of the things that essentially you realize is that disruptions are caused not by a single technology, but by a convergence of technologies.
Yeah.
And essentially the in business model innovation also. And in this case, it's the convergence of electric vehicles, of self-driving, and the business model would be the ride hailing, which essentially means Uber. When you combine that, then essentially what we got was something new, a business model called transport as a service that essentially means that the combination. We today park our cars 4% of the time. When you have a transport as a service, you can use cars about 40% of the time, maybe up to 80%. But you know, we said 40% of the time, that's 10 times the asset utilization, the car utilization of individual vehicles. When you combine that with self-driving, meaning you don't have to pay for the driver, plus when you combine that with electric vehicles, and here's the essentially you get this model of transport as a service that on day one, essentially day one is the day that self-driving cars are approved from a regulatory perspective to drive on open roads, on public roads. That day, the cost of transportation of TAS, transport as a service,
right,
be 10 times cheaper than the cost of a new car. 10 times cheaper.
Wow.
Every time there's been a 10x basically cost difference in similar products or services, there has been a disruption. And, you know, we can go back all the way to the printing press. I mean, the first Bible that came out of Gutenberg's printing press was 10 times cheaper than a manuscript Bible.
Right.
10 times. You know, the Ford Model T was $825, you know, and the carriage with two horses was $825. So you think, wait, it's the same.
Right.
But the Ford Model T had 20 horsepower, right? 10 times.
So
you got to and all that. So essentially, we got that there was a 10X on day one. And that's something that the incumbents cannot compete with. You cannot compete with 10X. And the other finding, interestingly, was that even if you already paid off your car, your individual owned car, the cost of transport as a service was going to be up to 4 times cheaper than the cost of owning a paid-off car. So essentially, it's cheaper than just the cost of gasoline and maintenance and insurance and so on. So, you know, essentially, that's the finding, that we will get a 4 to 10x improvement in cost on day one when self-driving is approved from a regulatory perspective.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. I mean, so we've all grown up over the last century nearly now where the model is you buy a car, you own a car. Oh, yeah, sure, it sits 96% of the time, but it's the convenience, it's there. And then there's also the status symbol part of this equation, right? That's sort of tied to the human nature part of us. If we're going to start sharing cars, you know, what happens to the sense of status? You know, how do we express ourselves? You know, this materialist, now that begins to become sort of, I see sort of as a, you know, if I can't have my fancy, you know, Lexus or my sports car, you know, who am I as a person?
Yeah, so what you're going to have is that the average American family is going to save $5,600 a year by not owning a car. And you can buy a lot of status with that money. And so, you know, throughout history, what has meant status has changed. I mean, at one point in American history, you know, hanging a pineapple on your window was a status symbol. And so, you know, clearly we laugh about it, but at the time it's a serious thing. And so, you know, saving $5,600 a year, we like, you know, to show off our car, but we like a good deal much more than that. And that is, you know, basically for the economy, for the U.S. economy, $1 trillion of additional consumer spending, $1 trillion. But for the individual, it's at least $5,600 and maybe more. And you know, we like status, but we like a deal much more than that.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. I mean, one of the things you came up with too, which I found intriguing, was the concept of free transportation, where in fact corporations would offer this as an incentive. You know, we have, for example, we have Costco's and companies like that that will offer free electric car charging to attract customers to their store. So sort of talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so the cost of transportation as a service will be so cheap that, you know, it's a little bit like what happened with information. Information before the web used to be expensive. We used to buy newspapers, we used to buy, you know, magazines, books, whatever, whatever it is that the publisher decided. And, you know, after Google came out and the web came out, essentially information is free. And they subsidize that by, you know, through other business models. And, you know, one potential business model is the following. You know, I live in San Francisco. I commute, say, to Stanford, which is 40 miles away. And I actually don't own a car. So I've been doing these numbers for 10 years. I have not owned a car. Yes, I love to drive. My last car was a Porsche. So it's not like I don't like to drive, but... So, you know, I've done this research. I've done the numbers for 10 years. I take an Uber, I take a Zipcar and so on, but lately Lyft and Uber and so on. And so imagine 40 miles. The cost today per mile is about $1 to $1.50. And, you know, I justify it because I work. So I work while somebody else drives and make money. Which is something that we did not include in the report, is how much money, additional money we can make while not driving, right? But imagine that the cost of transport as a service is going to be 7 cents per mile. And that's essentially what we came up with, seven cents per mile.
Okay.
So imagine...
As opposed to $1.50 or whatever.
7 cents to $1 plus per mile. Okay. Which is today, so it's 10x, at least 10x cheaper. So 7 cents per mile. Imagine Starbucks has a van with little tables and they're serving lattes and coffee and whatever. And so essentially they get seven people just to round it up. And seven people to do the 40-mile trip from my neighborhood to Stanford. Essentially to Starbucks, that's 1 cent per mile for my transportation. 40 miles, 40 cents. So if Starbucks gave me basically free transportation.
In exchange for coffee latte.
Exactly. So, okay, I will drink, you know, $10, $12 of coffee and, you know, eat something or other. And the cost to them is 40 cents. Right. So they would subsidize that 40 cents with the $10, $12 that I would spend on that 1 hour commute. And if there's traffic, it's 1.5 hours. So I will eat more. So there are possibilities. Transport will be so cheap that, you know, imagine the Googles and the Facebooks and so on who will find out, figure out new interesting business models to subsidize transportation in order to sell you things. And that's the idea.
Yeah, well, let me tell you an interesting corollary to this. Way back when I started EV World, I interviewed a gentleman in France who had started a service where he had what we would call, you know, neighborhood electric vehicles, you know, sort of expanded golf cars, right? That were, he was doing this for a local grocery chain. And so what would happen is people would call up. This was obviously somewhat before Uber and all these things evolved. But they would call up the local grocery chain and they would say, would you come pick me up? And then this driver would, you know, come along in this expanded golf cart, pick them up, take them to the store. They would do their shopping and they would drop them off. And the grocery store provided this as a free service.
There you go.
There and there we are. So if you had it automated, if you had, you know, in fact, I just saw a photograph of a, you know, there's Ollie and there's some other firms that have developed these seven passenger, interestingly, automated shuttles. You know, if they did away with the driver and they just have the shuttle and you've got, you know, a phone or something to, you know, you could see grocery chains, the Krogers of the world doing this just to attract people to come and do their shopping at Krogers.
Absolutely. And you know, one of the things that a lot of folks have not even talked about is, so usually the conversation is, you know, one unit, one car, ICE car versus one EV, right? But there are tens of millions of people, the elderly, the disabled, the poor, the struggling middle class, who are not well served by, you know, they can't drive.
Yep.
And they're not well served by the public transport.
Or they don't want to drive,
yep. Right? And that's tens of millions of folks.
Yep.
And so, yeah, we can imagine that the supermarkets will basically subsidize free transportation in order to bring them shopping and entertainment and so on and so forth. So there are tens of millions of people who are already basically, you know, a market for this kind of service. And if you look at, you know, New York City alone, every day there are 500,000 ride-hailing rides per day.
Wow.
500,000 in New York City. So, the concept is not new. Just imagine that 500,000 rides, which are, you know, Uber, Lyft, and so on, are going to be 10 times cheaper. You know, it's a no-brainer that it's going to disrupt everything.
Do we have, when I start thinking about this, you might be aware of the fact that Ford Motor Company just announced they're replacing Mark Fields
yes.
with Jim, Hackett, with Jim Hackett. Interestingly, Jim Hackett is a guy that headed up the Ford Shared Mobility project that was looking at the impact and looking at how Ford can get into these various shared mobility things. And, of course, they just announced a restructuring. They're going to cut about 10% of their workforce. That seems to me that's sort of playing right into this this scenario that you're talking about.
If, you know, Ford gets it, you know, the guy who basically ran their self-driving car program is the one who got promoted to be the CEO. And, you know, I can't claim, you know, credits for that, but clearly they've done the numbers. They've run they've been going through this transformation for a little bit. And yeah, I mean, the key enabler of the disruption is going to be self-driving.
Right.
And so, you know, car companies that are not essentially don't get this, that are trying to protect their combustion business or are trying to protect manufacturing is going to be in a tough business.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the number of cars is going to decrease by about 70% per year manufactured. And it's not the incumbents that are necessarily going to survive. A recent report by UBS said that essentially 56% of the content in an electric vehicle in the GM Bolt comes from outside the traditional value chain of automotive. So, you know, it comes from batteries and also LG and so on. So, you know, essentially this is not a disruption that is going to happen from within the industry. No disruption, basically few disruptions happen from within. They usually come from the outside. So you're going to have a production market that's 70% smaller, and you're going to have a lot of entrants like the Teslas of the world getting into that business. And so it's going to be a tough business. And yeah, so Ford's announcement of a new CEO is a sign that they're starting to get that, you know, the disruption is around the corner. It's not something that, you know, they've been selling us on that it's going to take, you know, a generation, 40 years. It's going to happen right now. Yes.
Well, I thought that was it. You were talking about, I think, that the tipping point where electric cars become competitive in the sense of total cost of ownership will happen basically next year, 2018.
Yes, that's what UBS said, next year. And, you know, I've been predicting that for a while. And, you know, finally, you know, folks are catching up. But you know, the key There are a lot of things about electric vehicles that make them disruptive. But, you know, even UBS is still thinking about electric vehicles as a one-to-one replacement for ICE vehicles. And essentially what we're saying in this report is that that is not the disruption. Yes, EVs, if you only think about them as a one-to-one substitute, they will disrupt ICE, right? But that's going to be a longer kind of disruption.
Right.
But when you have transport as a service, essentially the disruption is there's going to be no more individual ownership of vehicles.
Yeah.
And one of the key findings in our research was the following. Electric vehicles can go 500,000 miles.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically maintenance is essentially 10 times cheaper.
Tires and windshield wipers.
Exactly, right? 500,000 miles, whereas internal combustion engine automobiles can go 140,000, you know, 200,000 at best. So 500,000 miles gives you plus lower cost of maintenance, lower cost of everything, fueling and so on, gives you basically an advantage that ICE vehicles cannot
Well, let's talk a little bit then, because obviously this is going to impact one of the most powerful, pervasive, dirty industries in the world. That's the oil industry. This is going to have a profound impact on them.
Yes, yes. Essentially, we did the numbers, and what we found was that oil is going to peak 2020. At about 100 million barrels per day. And it's going to basically go down from there to about 70 million barrels by 2030. And essentially 30 million barrels of oil will be wiped out the market. And that means that a lot of expensive fields, a lot of expensive infrastructure related to those fields.
Offshore, the Arctic.
Yeah. Deep water, sands, and shale oil. Basically, all of that is going to be wiped out, or most of that, because they're not going to be able to compete in a world of 70 million barrels. Essentially, in a market with 70 million barrels, the equilibrium price is going to be $25.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to compete at $25, meaning, you know, you're going to have to produce at much less than that.
Yeah.
And you know, all these high cost fields are going to be essentially wiped out. And, you know, we did the numbers, 70% of Canadian sand, 70% of North Dakota, and so on and so forth. And yeah, so, you know, they're not going to like it, but that's the nature of.
So in an essence, you know, the old saying about the Stone Age didn't end because of stones. The oil age will end for lack of money.
The Stone Age ended because it was disrupted by a new technology, bronze.
Yeah.
Essentially, it was disrupted by bronze. And, you know, the oil age is going to end because, you know, internal combustion engine automobiles are going to be disrupted by on-demand, electric, self-driving automobiles, essentially. And that's
so,
it.
So I'm guessing that the oil industry is not going to roll over and play dead on this, are they? How do you think they're going to respond?
They're pushing back, of course, and they have, through the usual regulatory, through laws, through governments, and so on, but I mean, the truth is that there isn't much that they can do about it right now. For a couple of reasons. One is that this is a global disruption. The technologies for ride-hailing, for self-driving, and for electric vehicles are global. China is investing a lot of money in doing it. Europe is investing money, and we are investing money in the U.S. It can happen anywhere. In the country that makes this happen is going to have a 10x, basically cheaper transportation system, which is going to open up a whole host of new market. Essentially, they're going to become the Silicon Valley of transportation. And if you look at the 20th century, the countries that dominated transportation dominated the 20th century economically. So, you know, essentially that's one. So from a geopolitical perspective, the countries that basically roll over because of the oil lobbies are going to lose, are going to be big losers. The second point is that oil companies now are going to have to lobby against essentially the companies with the highest market capitalization in the world, Google, yeah, and Amazon and Apple and so on, right? Yeah. So it's not just, you know, lobbying against you know, the green lobby or whatever. I mean, they're going to come up against powerful companies that are going to be on the other side. And on top of that, there are a lot of beneficiaries, like the elderly and the disabled and so on, of this transport as a service disruption, and they're going to be on the side of the disruption against the oil lobby. So it's going to be a tough fight for them, for both those reasons. Yeah.
Who's going to be the Polaroid and the Xerox of the future here among the car companies, for example?
So I can't give you, you know, names. I can just tell you that because it's hard to, I can tell you where the industry is going, but, you know, to talk about individual companies and so on is a much more difficult prediction, right? Because a lot of things can happen, right? That could come out of China, for instance, Didi, which, you know, kicked Uber out of China, right, outbid Uber, that's what he meant, is investing heavily in self-driving. Baidu is investing heavily in self-driving, and so on. So it could come out of China. It could come out of Europe. It could come out of the United States. That's a, you know, more difficult prediction. But the easier prediction to make, because the numbers are there, is that the transport as a service disruption is pretty inevitable. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen soon.
Yeah. So what are your critics saying? What's their chief criticism of the report?
You know, I've been surprised that a lot of folks have got it, and that they understand and that they have looked at the numbers. This is all about economics,
yeah,
right? This is all about economics. And if you do the numbers say that there's going to be a disruption. I mean, some folks say that it couldn't possibly happen so quickly. You know, essentially my answer is that if you look at a little company called Uber that did not even exist in 2008,
yeah,
today their bookings are higher than the whole taxi industry in America. The whole taxi industry, and this started, yeah, from, you know, basically a garage, right, less than 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So disruptions happen in 10 years or less, and disruptions in transportation happen in 10 years or less. So there it is.
So if you're an investor, don't put your money in oil and gas and coal. Put your money where? Fill in the rest of the blank.
You know, I don't give investment advice, but, you know, all the data's there, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know, Warren Buffett's rule number one is don't lose money.
Right.
That's all I can say.
Right. So we got. Of course, I live here in Omaha, and I get to attend the shareholder meeting every year. So I get to see Warren from afar. But
yes.
Anyway, it has been a pleasure talking to you. The report, by the way, for everybody listening, the report is free. You can download it online. It's 77 pages of really fascinating reading, I have to say. So.
Bill, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Very good. Take care. Stay in touch.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to an EV World Future in Motion podcast with Bill Moore. For more information on the world of electric vehicles, subscribe to evworld.com. This has been an evworld.com Incorporated audio production.